Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
I was told our computer just crashed. Just boom, right there. As the intro was being played, what did it just fade to black? Just totally turned off. That's great. Apparently the station has just caught COVID-19, but we'll be fine. We're wearing masks. No, we're not.
That's a lie.
Not in the studio anyways. But there you go. Who needs these stinking computers? I heard they're not even really a good thing to bet the future on anymore. We should go back to carts and analog tapes and reel-to-reel.
And that's just sketches.
I mean, you can see the reel-to-reel spinning. You know that's not going to stop working as long as there's a nice rotation.
Perpetual motion.
And here we are. And here I saw somebody took a picture of their Windows work screen and half of it shut down. Someone's like, oh, Melinda Gates already got her half. Already took it.
Yeah. You know what? I'm going to let that one go.
Yeah, when you're
I can't wrap my head around this one because, I just can't.
I'm just going to tell you right now.
When Jeff Bezos has a better divorce than you're going to have, you're probably in trouble.
You might be. You might be. When your internal editor kicks in, I suggest you listen.
Yeah. I couldn't make my way through the thicket of nonsense.
It's called survival instinct. Congratulations.
It's not even that. It wasn't off color. It was, what's the point I want to make here? And I realized I didn't care enough about either of them.
So just punt on the
just,
entire thing.
I hope they spend the rest of their lives in court losing and all the money ends up going to charity and they don't get a write-off on any of it.
There you go. Get some money in the pockets of charities. We had a little breaking news for you that wasn't good news for the Boston Celtics. Jaylen Brown has a torn ligament in his left wrist, which means he's done for the season. Shams just shared that a little bit. That's bad news for a team that is all sorts of moving in the wrong directions.
Yeah, they are sixth and dying slowly. So I would anticipate that they're – well, let me look at this because I don't want to be wrong. They've got a two-game cushion on Charlotte for the 8 and a three-game cushion on Washington for the 9. And they both and all three of them have 4 games left. So there's a possibility that Washington could catch them because that's the one that would make the most impact.
Is Washington going to be catching anyone with Bradley Beal definitely missing the next 2 games? I don't know about that.
Russell Westbrook is going to do – Russell Westbrook will give assists to players who are no longer on the roster.
Quadruple doubles? Is that the secret?
No, he'll have triple-digit assists at some point. He's – as good as Beal has been – people have been most mesmerized by productive Westbrook again. He looks the way he looked in 13 and 14 in Oklahoma City, where even though his usage is still high, the team is thriving because of it. And, you know, in stops between those years and now, Oklahoma City suffered in some part because of Westbrook.
Got a little selfish.
And Houston never got anything out of him. So let's put it this way. I'm saying it's possible.
Are you back on the Russell Westbrook bandwagon?
I'm not, but Washington throws up a bunch of points every night, and I don't think they're going to turtle here and just accept the fact that they're going to be ninth, even though frankly, I would probably rather play Indiana, which is basically a bunch of guys trying to kill each other and the coach at the same time.
Yeah, they're not.
Then I would Charlotte or Boston, even depleted Boston.
Pacers are a mess. Celtics are a mess.
Yeah, that's the one thing about the play-in that I don't particularly like. It just means that people are creating these frantic narratives around teams that you wouldn't otherwise look at.
I mean, the Pacers weren't expected to do much at all this year. Boston had some expectations attached to the year that makes their descent into irrelevance a lot more interesting than, yeah. Oh, the Pacers are going to be here for a night. Anyone care?
Yeah.
No.
I mean, no, yeah, but I mean, Jason Tatum still having, you know, symptoms from COVID after all this time. And now Jaylen Brown, you know, I'd be surprised if they didn't lose all four of their last games.
I wouldn't either. And then Brad Stevens might get fired, and he should have taken that, what, eight-year, $80 million deal Indiana put in front of him, but he said no thanks.
Actually, I just looked at Boston's schedule. They'll lose to the Heat. They'll lose game 72 to the Knicks, but they're also at Cleveland and at Minnesota.
I'm just glad
they're going to win one of those two.
I'm glad you're on the Knicks bandwagon.
I'm not on the Knicks bandwagon. It offends me that they're good. But I also have faith that they will fail in the end.
They're going to fail in the end. But you got to give Tom Thibodeau some credit. Sometimes suicides and wind sprints are what a basketball team needs to turn a year around.
But that's all they do is turn a year around. And then all of a sudden everybody looks at him and goes, we did all that last year. We're done doing that. It happened in Chicago. It happened in Minnesota. You know, Tom Thibodeau is a short shelf life guy.
Baby steps, though, for the Knicks. I mean, you can't be 20 years irrelevant and then talk about how the next 5 years
no,
are going to be
they
rosy.
Should, they should live in Illusionville for the rest of this year. But next year, those players, they're done doing wind sprints.
You're probably right. But Thibodeau does wear out his welcome. But there's also an element of if you adapt an actual element of toughness in your NBA team, you're going to win some basketball games in this league. It's full of soft teams that would rather not get physical. If you get a little physical, you can do something. And I think that's why the Knicks are a lot more interesting than anybody thought that they would be this year, just from a, like, getting a little nastier. And before we get to Thurl Bailey, by the way, who's going to be joining us in a little bit to talk about the Warriors, Utah Jazz, and the vacuum of tonight's game, and then a big, broader conversation with Thurl Bailey coming up in a little bit, Kent Bazemore was asked the other night, is there another level to Steph Curry? And Kent Bazemore had a really interesting answer where he brought up the fact that Curry just went totally bonkers with 49 points in 29 minutes. I mean, that's some efficiency, boys and girls. 49 points, 29 minutes, didn't even play the fourth quarter. And Kent Bazemore is basically asked, is there like an evil Curry? Is there bizarro Curry? Is there an angry, dark place for Curry to tap into to get even nastier? And Bazemore had a pretty good answer.
It'd be scary. That's what's so crazy. You rarely see the explosive, like, just where he just beat red in the face, screaming, you know, slamming stuff. You know, he threw his mouthpiece a couple times back in the day, but you're never really going to see him sweat. And it's amazing how, you know, he can keep it under wraps. But I'm sure he has that. You know, all these guys, you know, Jordan, Michael, all these assassins have that. You know, it's just how they express themselves. I remember back in the finals, the look he gave Dellavedova running up the left wing. After he hit that three, you know, it's just, you know, his way of showing it. You know, he could have, like, stood there and beat his chest and stared at him, but, you know, that's just not Steph. I mean, who knows? If he gets to that level, then, I mean, watch out. It'll be scary. I mean, that's just another, it'll be scary. 49 points in 29 minutes, though, that's unreal. And we got guys hurting hamstrings trying to keep up.
That's a little bit of a shot at Bradley Beal at the end, saying you got guys pulling hamstrings just to live on the block that Steph Curry rightfully occupies. And look, Bradley Beal is a better player than that. That's for sure, especially from a scoring standpoint. But he is right. Steph Curry can do to you an entire week's worth of damage in about half an hour's of court time.
The thing about Curry, though, is he shows you that nasty side all the time. It's just that he's smiling when he does it. Because he doesn't have to do anything facially. It's every shimmy is a knee in the groin. Every time he's, you know, running backwards down the floor with both his arms in the air, it's a knee in the groin. He does it all the time. It's just not the way you're used to. You know, he doesn't stand there and just scream mindlessly.
Right.
He just grins at you. It just, and it's probably creepier than if he did try to, you know, look like a hard guy. He's just going, I'm having fun. I'm standing on your neck and we'll come down again. And then I'll stand on your neck some more. He has interesting theatrical qualities.
You know what's the old saying? Like, don't mistake my kindness for weakness.
Yeah.
There's a little of that going on out there all times with him.
Don't mistake my jocularity for not hating you, because I do hate you, because I'm embarrassing you.
Curry really does go out and embarrass teams. There is no doubt. He has nothing but the focus of the other team's defense, and that isn't even enough to slow him down at times. When we were talking to Amin El-Hassan, like, I know I brought up what sounds like that, well, don't talk like that. That's the wrong way to go about playing, and certainly in the NBA they don't play like that anymore. If I had to survive 48 minutes of basketball against the Golden State Warriors in a one-game thought, I'm trying to put Steph Curry through the court. I mean, there's just no other way for me to say what my strategy would be. And you could tell me, you could call me bad for the sport. You could call me bad for basketball. You could call me dirty. You could call me Neanderthal, where you don't have a lot of room left in a sports world. And then I would say, when you call me all those things, make sure you call me in my hotel room as I move on to the next series.
But here's the thing. Washington did that to him twice without resorting to that. They just put more people on him than they would on the other four guys. They basically said, and they clearly had the guys to do it, we're going to defend one guy. Everybody else, do what you must. But if we're going to lose to Andrew Wiggins, shame on us. If we're going to lose to Stephen Curry, way shame on us. And so they don't even have to be dirty. They just have to, put 2.5 men on him, basically, and just show him different stuff all the time. And so he just get in his way. Cleveland did that in the 2015 series while they were still ahead, because they had the bodies to do it. They picked up Curry at half court, and they never let him go. And it took until Iguodala, you know, put a stranglehold on LeBron in game four for that dynamic to change. So there are ways to do this without driving him into the scorer's table.
You're right. I just know what I would do.
Yeah. See, you secretly like hockey, but you're hiding it.
Oh, look.
Physicality
returning to the world of sports is something I'm all about. I'm not one of those like, Jesus, should get easier around here, especially come playoff time. And I guarantee you, Thurl Bailey didn't get the nickname Big T by shrinking in physical moments, that's for sure. Thurl Bailey, good enough to join us here on 95.7 The Game with the Utah Jazz in town. And Thurl, thank you for joining us again. We had a great conversation with you not even a year ago, and we really appreciate you joining us once again here on Damon Ratto and Kolsky. No Kolsky this afternoon. It's just me and Ray that you're dealing with today, but you dealt with a lot of double teams in your day.
Yeah, you know, and I had a couple guys I could kick it out to, but you know, sometimes I just shot over a couple of guys that were shorter than me.
No doubt. Hey, sometimes you got to let it rain on the whole basketball court. We know that Steph Curry can do that. My gosh, he just dropped 49 points in 29 minutes against the YMCA Oklahoma City Thunder team. And now here comes a much better basketball team. As a matter of fact, Thurl, I'm just going to come out and tell you that with a healthy backcourt, I think this is the Utah Jazz's year. I really do. I think it's, number one, you got the whole factor of it's been a long time coming working for you in the cosmos. Number two, in a world of basketball inconsistency, I think the Utah Jazz might be the most consistent team in the NBA. You can count on everyone to go out there and do their jobs most nights.
Well, I agree. And, you know, it takes a while to get where the Jazz are. I mean, Quinn Snyder's been really developing this team over his tenure here, how he wants to sell the system. Right, and the system works. And I truly believe that part of that reason is what he saw from the old Warrior teams when he talked about them looking like a living organism, right? They're out there and you just kind of plug and play and guys are doing their jobs. I think they have just as good a chance as anybody. They're not resting on their laurels at all. They're just trying to finish strong and get the best possible position.
Toward that end, as they get into the playoffs, being the top seed, having the kind of home court advantage you have and the roster and coaching you've got, is there any team coming out of this play-in tournament that actually concerns them at all? I know you could say the Lakers if LeBron is close to healthy, which he probably won't be. You could say the one-man band in Golden State. You could look at Memphis or San Antonio or maybe even New Orleans. Is there any scenario in which the Jazz would look at any of those teams and go, you know what, they're an awful lot to handle?
I've listened to Quinn get interviewed every single game, every single day almost, and that question's been thrown at him in different ways. And I would say I don't think there's really any concern from the Jazz from other teams. I think the concern might be, can the Jazz continue to be who they're supposed to be? First of all, defensively is where they really talk about hanging their hat, right? Secondly, the three-point shot is valuable, as you well know, to the Jazz. Very valuable. And they've got multiple guys who can knock them down. They don't have to rely just on one or two guys to do it because of the way the system works. And they have to create a lot of those opportunities off of good D. So I think what he might say he would be worried about is his team not playing the kind of basketball they should be playing. They dropped those two games against Minnesota, and you always have those anomaly games where a team with nothing really to play for comes out and catches you on the right day, in this case, the right couple of days, and just matches up well with you. So I don't think this Jazz team looks at the standings and say, wow, we don't want to run into these guys. I think they respect the fact that teams are gunning for them right now because they pretty much held steady at the top of the heap. So, there's some scenarios in there where I'm sure individual players might be looking at it and says, well, we really don't – do we want to catch the Lakers in that first round? But I don't know if this team is really worried about other teams as much as they are what they do.
Thurl Bailey here on 95.7 The Game, talking about the Warriors-Jazz, certainly in the vacuum of tonight's game, and then in the bigger, broader terms of the maybe meeting in the postseason. Tonight, without either Connolly or Donovan Mitchell, you would think Utah would slow down. They've won five in a row while both guys have been out. I mean, that to me is just another reason why this is a team to be feared. I also think it's another reason why Rudy Gobert's name should probably have more respect put on it when he's discussed around this league. Is Rudy Gobert secretly the best Utah Jazz basketball player? I think he might be, with all due respect to Mitchell and Connolly. He's just a badass is what he is.
Do you know how excited I am to hear you say that? Because we see it every day, right? We see it every game. And being in the market that we're in and being where basketball is today with, very exciting players, maybe two or three of them on the same team, I think people don't look at Rudy in that way. And what they don't see are the things that don't show up on the stat sheet, right? That how he affects the game, how he affects decisions from the opponents, right? And when he goes out, how the opponents try to take advantage of his absence. So, I think that's refreshing to hear. Because in a day and age where, pretty much everything geared towards the offense, high scores, the rules, can't touch a guy. You guys were talking about throwback old school basketball where you can hit a guy and you just keep playing. That's gone. So with a guy like Rudy who doesn't have any plays necessarily run for him, especially back to the basket stuff, I think that might be all but gone from the league almost. But a guy who has found his niche on the offensive end. We know what he can do defensively. I think he's on his way to another DPOY. But offensively, he has found his way to be effective, and teams are trying to take that away. So I agree. He is a badass.
You know, and I think that makes me appreciate him is because we, thanks through the prism of Draymond Green explaining what he is on a night-in, night-out basis.
Right.
Like, I appreciate the fact that the way that Draymond can bang on the low block with bigs and defend the perimeter is what separates him and makes him one of the NBA's all-time defensive Swiss Army knives. Rudy now has the foot speed to go out to the perimeter that I don't know if he had 2-3 years ago, and that's the difference in him.
Correct. Correct. You're spot on with that. And he takes a lot of pride in what he does, especially on the defensive end. We had an interview here the other night after the two Minnesota losses, I believe, or maybe it was after the Phoenix loss, that he challenged his teammates, right? And he challenged them to, you know, to play D and make D a priority. And they came out the next game, and some of his teammates, like George Niang, talked about it, and he said, Rudy's right, right? I mean, we have to take a lot of pride in what we do on the defensive end if we're going to have a shot at this ring. And so you're right. I mean, he's a special player. He really is. And he's continuing. Like two nights ago, I saw a turnaround jump shot in the paint. You know, he's working on things that are going to make him a force on the offensive end as well.
The one team that you guys haven't beaten this year that is of concern would be Phoenix. Is that an indication that they can do things to you guys that other teams can't? Or is that just an accident of schedule?
You know, it might be some of both. As I kind of analyze that team, and boy, have they done well. Their body of work has been amazing. And I think you owe a lot of that to what Chris Paul brings to that team. I don't know if the Jazz – I think what Phoenix has done offensively is figured out that they have, you know, Jazz have to pick their poison like teams, like they do to other teams. That mid-range game really troubles the Jazz sometimes because Rudy has to either come out and guard scorers like Chris Paul in the paint, or they have to stay back and help and prevent the lob. So I think that's really been tough for them. The other part of that is when the Jazz aren't shooting well and they're missing shots and turning the ball over, the transition defense, that team trying to get back before Rudy can get back there and set up. And the Jazz have struggled with that, with a great Suns team that likes to go downhill. So, you know, I don't know. In a playoff series, it could be different, right? I mean, you play the same team, you get to figure things out. They got to figure things out on your end. But they have had the Jazz's number, and there's something to that.
I tell you what, Thurl, we're really excited to talk to you in the past. Today was another great conversation. Thanks so very much. And if this indeed looks like an early round, a 1-8, a 2-7, yeah, however it breaks down, I hope we can get back in touch with you, man.
Anytime. You got my number. Just call me directly. It's going to be an exciting game tonight.
Thurl Bailey. Thank you. Thank you so much. Really appreciate your time, man.
All right, guys.
Good stuff. Thurl Bailey, whenever he tells me I got a good basketball eye, that's a good way to get yourself rebooked on the show. Hey.
Sucking up, never a bad play.
Never a bad play. But I do, I mean it. I think that we, or at least I'm not going to speak for both of us, but there are nuances to the game that when you watch Draymond on a nightly basis, you start understanding and you see them applied in other places, other players, other teams. And Rudy Gobert is one of those guys. How about this? If Rudy Gobert were a brother from Compton, not playing for the Utah Jazz, you'd know a lot more about him than a big white French guy tucked away in Utah.
Even if he was a guy who came from Compton, Utah is aggressively unfashionable.
Exactly.
So it's not really about Gobert. It's the shirt that he's wearing. I mean, part of that is that when the Jazz were at their best, when they had Malone and Stockton, they were a fun team for fundamentalists to watch, but not for people who enjoyed jazz, like basketball played by jazz musicians.
Right.
So I think there's some of that, too. It's Utah is the team nobody wants to watch, except that when you watch them, you get a lot of reward from it.
888-957-9570. I tell you, watching the Jazz this year has been good because there is a lot of early Golden State Warriors strength in numbers element to them. You heard Thurl say it's like an amoeba. It's like a living organism out there, and that's why they are a threat even as their backcourt is hampered right now. Damon Ratto and Kolsky here on 95.7 The Game. Reminder, J.D. Covey Barnett, get you set with Warriors Live. 5:30 tonight is when they get underway. Tip-off is at 7 o'clock right here on 95.7 The Game. We are brought to you by Fremont Bank, full-service banking. No compromises.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome, welcome. It is really good to have you here. Rick Bozich. He is a longtime Midwest sports journalist based in Louisville. I'm not going to tell you that he went to Indiana University.
And even though you just did.
Was there in 75-76 as Bob Knight was going undefeated. Rick Bozich now works for WDRB in Louisville. And, of course, in Louisville, there is no bigger story than what is happening at the Kentucky Derby in good times. And in bad times, it is the biggest story in their world. And let's be totally honest. I know you're here to listen to Golden State Warrior, San Francisco Giant, all sorts of local sports, and we are going to get back to them. But Rick Bozich is joining Ray and I at the top of the hour to talk about sports' latest doping scandal. And what do you know? This time it involves a horse. Positive test. The Kentucky Derby win of Medina Spirit has been brought into question. And in what is without a doubt my most cynical sports opinion on anything that you'll ever hear out of my mouth, Ray, other than, you know, at Kentucky they're cheating right now, which isn't cynical, it's just true. But when it comes to physical racing, the investigation has to start on the medal platform. Whether it be humans racing, or animals racing, racing in itself is a doping sport. There's no way around it. There's no way to pretend it's not. And to try to frame it as it has nothing to do with who's winning these races is a fool's errand. Track, bike racing, horse racing, we're talking about the three dirtiest sports there are in terms of doping. Are we both working from the same place there?
I'm trying to think because I wouldn't put it past boxing and MMA as well. I think it's hard to imagine many sports that aren't doping. I think curling probably isn't doping. Swimming might be, though they're pretty strident about that. But your general point, your general point is correct.
Yeah,
it's just that if you want to go, if you want to find the medal stand of doping, you know, horse racing is fighting it out with weightlifting for the bronze.
If your sport declares its winner with somebody crossing the finish line first, chances are it's a doping sport. Period. End of story. So Bob Baffert has many, many great days of horse racing and a few less than glorious days of horse racing that are now in focus because he got DQ'd from the one race that people pay an awful lot of attention to. The Kentucky Derby is not some Thursday afternoon at Saratoga in August where you can do something left of center and outside of the people who pick up a racing form every day, you don't really hear about it. The Kentucky Derby is the one place where all eyes fall, all ears are listening. And Bob Baffert, let's be completely honest here. Ray, since we're talking doping,
yeah,
I got to invoke Gary Radnich. Because the greatest thing that Gary Radnich ever offered in terms of sports analysis was when he was talking about Barry Bonds and he just said, should have stopped at 70. By taking it and pushing it all the way out to 73, you were asking for a little bit of attention. Bob Baffert has had so many great horses win so many great races. Like, that should be the number one red flag there is, because great trainers are lucky if they get one, two, three great horses in their lifetime. There is no, I'm the trainer that every horse I touch turns to gold. Like, that trainer didn't exist until Baffert did. And I guess that should be a red flag on its surface. And now we're learning that he's had horses fail five drug tests in the past year. And he is saying, happenstance, happenstance, all of this, the world's out to get me, I can't explain it. Okay, so I guess we'll examine that just a little bit. Are you buying happenstance, like I said, as we agree that if you cross the finish line first, chances are somebody's doping?
No, I'm not buying happenstance. I mean, you know, doping has been a part of horse racing since there's been dopes.
Or horses.
Yeah. And the fact that he's been caught doing it multiple times this year suggests to me, more than anything else, that he's got this sense of being bulletproof because he's Bob Baffert and because he did it five other times and nobody made a big deal out of it. I find it incongruous that he could not know about this. I find it preposterous that he's talking about the rogue urination of a stable hand as the possible reason why Medina Spirit tested plus.
Let me explain this a little bit. One of the excuses offered up in the land of I don't know where this positive test comes from is a story that a stable boy, I don't know, a stable person, maybe not a stable person, but someone who was on cough medicine took a leak in Medina Spirit's stall. Medina Spirit then ate the hay that the guy took a leak on, and that might have triggered the drug test.
Yeah, it might have.
It might have. It might not have. Bob Baffert was on the Dan Patrick Show today offering up not mea culpas, but
mea victims.
Yeah, here's Bob Baffert on the Dan Patrick Show today saying, I don't know.
I didn't administer that. The horse didn't get my, I'm an open book. I'm a Hall of Fame trainer. I had a lot of success, and a lot of people are out there, you know, just they don't like it. You know, that's part of the game. I understand it, but I didn't do it. And they need to look at this in a different way. It shouldn't have been called a positive, and they know it's a contaminant level. And we've been dealing with this. And I keep saying, you know, racing has a lot of problems, but Bob Baffert isn't one of them. But with success comes a lot of jealousy and animosity. But I'm an open book. I'm very transparent. They look at all the vet records. We present everything to them. We're an open book.
Lots of open book references. He brings up his resume, uses third person.
Yeah. Explain contaminant level, then maybe you've got me. Because if the amount in the horse is so high that it's improbable, maybe you got a case to make. But I'm an open book is not an explanation, let alone an excuse. It's condemnatory. It's, you know, I'm an open book. I'm Bob Baffert. Then why are you doing this now? That's my question. It's not, oh, well, you must be fine.
I mean, was he so pinioned under his own success, he felt the pressure to keep it up? And that's maybe the excuse. I mean, here's the deal. You know what team – the horses that are good enough to win the Kentucky Derby, rarely have they been $1,000 claimers. How do you take a horse that you picked up in a $1,000 claiming race and turn that horse into a Kentucky Derby winner when the entirety of horse racing is about lineage and who sired who? And, you know, I mean, if you're a Seinfeld fan, is he a mutter? He's a mutter. His fodder was a mutter. His mutter was a mutter. They're mutters. You know, I mean, there is no sport where who wins, who loses today, you can trace the family tree back to what horses they all came from. And rarely can you take a $1,000 junker horse and say, up, and they just happen to win the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, this is not, you know, a Mr. Ed documentary. The Baffert's explanation as presented to Dan Patrick is profoundly incomplete. And because it's profoundly incomplete, and because the sport is what it is, the natural suspicion is something's rotten in Denmark. And, you know, I mean, again, I want to hear the explanation that makes this make sense, and I haven't heard it yet. And that's why Rick Bozich will explain it to us.
He'll be here in just a minute. I have a question that if you were able to answer this with a yes, I would say, okay, maybe happenstance is in play here. How often has Bob Baffert had a horse trigger a positive test after a last place finish?
If it's
never, he's guilty. If it's never, he's guilty. If happenstance cannot only happen to winning horses.
I have a better one. Why would the leading trainer in all of horse racing for 30 plus years now have stable hands who will just take a leak in the horse's stall?